This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Mike Elam, Amy Mark scores with you on a Friday.
Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year.
I don't think we've said that to each other yet.
I don't think we have either.
There you go.
I think I just started complaining right out of the gate. It's like, well, I can't do this anymore. I hate the news.
Year's,
I hate politics. I'm not cut out for this. I don't know what's going to happen. I had a complete breakdown, but look at us. Look at me. I pulled it together. I'm a real inspiration.
I hate the news. I hate the politics. Why am I working in talk radio? Well, Happy New Year, everybody.
Oh, Happy New Year.
This is going to be great.
I know. We were talking about waking up in the morning and not diving headfirst into the news or social media. And I think that is such a great idea. We didn't even continue that conversation. Too many things to talk about. Not enough time. You never thought we'd say that on a three-hour show.
Hey, but we've still got 2 more hours to solve the problems of the world. We can get that done. I feel confident.
We're starting out strong.
That's right.
Pretty soon we'll be talking about dreams that
we had. I'm just thankful I'm not Will Smith. But that's a whole other story that we'll get into later as well.
Wait, what?
Oh, don't. Nope.
I don't know this.
We're going to talk about CBS Evening News right now.
Okay.
And we will get back to Will Smith and the craziness that is being the Fresh Prince.
Oh, okay.
A little bit later on.
I didn't even know there was an update. All right. So a lot of people know about the changeover at CBS News. Barry Weiss is now the head of CBS News. And that's been headlines. Well, there was also an announcement that Tony DeCoupel will now be the evening news anchor for CBS News. And he had a message for CBS viewers, and we can play most of it here. And he addressed his viewers, I should say.
A lot has changed since the first person sat in this chair. But for me, the biggest difference is people do not trust us like they used to. And it's not just us. It's all of legacy media. And I get it. I get it because I've been hearing about it from just about everybody for more than 20 years as I've traveled America on this assignment or that. My mom's neighbors in West Virginia, my own neighbors in New York City, thousands and thousands of conversations in between. Sometimes people want to talk to me about our coverage of NAFTA or the Iraq War. Other times it's all about Hillary Clinton's emails or Russiagate. Or more recently, COVID lockdowns, Hunter Biden's laptop, or the president's fitness for office. The point is, on too many stories, the press has missed the story because we've taken into account the perspective of advocates and not the average American. Or we put too much weight in the analysis of academics or elites and not enough on you. And I know this because at certain points, I have been you. I have felt this way too. I felt like what I was seeing and hearing on the news didn't reflect what I was seeing and hearing in my own life, and that the most urgent questions simply weren't being asked. So here's my promise to you today and every time you see me in this chair. You come first, not advertisers, not politicians, not corporate interests. And yes, that does include the corporate owners of CBS. I report for you, which means I tell you what I know, when I know it, and how I know it. And when I get it wrong, I'll tell you that too. It also means I'm going to talk to everybody and hold everyone in public life to the very same standard. After all, I became a journalist to talk to people. I love talking to people about what works in this country, what doesn't, and not only what should change, but the good ideas that should never change. I think telling the truth is one of them. I'm Tony DeCoupel, the anchor of the CBS Evening News. Hold me to it.
So again, Tony DeCopel taking over CBS anchor position, evening anchor for CBS News. I feel like there is a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
Because I am a huge fan of reporters and a free press. We know we're going to talk about newspapers later. I also am not naive and know that there are also reporters who do in various ways reveal a bias.
Yes.
And but I am not someone who says, "Oh, the media, as you know, is the legacy media is terrible." I don't do that. I also don't view media as if they are somehow sainted. I feel like I have a pretty objective view of it. But I wanted to get some of your thoughts. And of course, if you're listening, 314-436-7900, because I am so grateful for reporters who do work and investigations that really do, to use the cliche, they can call it speak truth to power, but also like let us know things that are going on that we otherwise wouldn't know.
Agreed.
And then there are, here's what I think bias can be shown in media sometimes, is not by making up stories, but when they choose what they're going to amplify and what they're going to diminish in their reporting.
And I think that really becomes where most people have a problem with traditional media. And you see these stories that come out from time to time, and it has watchdog groups, if you will, that track how many minutes have been spent on national media on particular stories. And you will see if it's Fox may be the only network that covers a certain story, and then you go look at ABC, CBS, NBC, and all the MSNBC, CNN, and all of that, and you see 0 hours, 0 minutes on this particular story. So we tend to get our news in echo chambers these days, which is really unfortunate. We tend to have these biases that we're going to gravitate to. So if you're a conservative, you're probably a Fox News person. If you're a liberal, then you're probably an MSNBC or CNN type person, because they tend to report the stories the way that you like the story to be reported. And it plays into your biases. The problem with that is, for most of us, you don't get a well-rounded view of the issue. You only hear one side of the issue. And if you hear one side of the issue, then it's pretty easy to feel very confident in how you think that story's played out. And he talks about how there's been a lot of people who've sat in his chair. I don't think anybody thinks that any of our current big network people are Walter Cronkite anymore. I don't think we see those people anymore, because Cronkite, the biggest thing wasn't so much the way that he did the news, in that we didn't know what his preference was for one party or another. You didn't know that. The problem you have with these news media people these days, they want to tell you who they're affiliated with and who they're associated with.
And I will say this, though, because some yes and some no. I think there are a lot of journalists that I don't necessarily know what their political views are. However, I think it's important first to demarcate or delineate that there is a difference between an investigative journalist / reporter
mm-hmm.
and an opinion giver.
There is.
I'm not a reporter. I'm an opinion giver.
Right.
I sit here and give opinions. I don't even think I agree with my job. Nobody needs my opinions for 3 hours a day. I think I'm fundamentally opposed to it. I don't think it's a good idea, but lo and behold, I gotta eat. So here I am. But no, I mean, I'm an opinion giver.
Right.
So I am going to have biases for sure, or lack of knowledge in some areas for sure. There are talking heads on cable news that are opinion givers.
Very much so.
That's what they are. And they're not reporters. So I think when we look at media, we need to look at the difference between opinion givers and reporters. Then when we look at reporters, if you are, and I will say well-read, because you take away a lot of the sexiness when it's a newspaper.
True.
In the sense that you don't have the cable news or the TikTok videos. And I subscribe to the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the Atlantic, the New Yorker. the National Review. I have subscribed to the Boston Globe, the LA Times, and the Miami Herald, and then, like I said, started running out of money, so those subscriptions expired.
Not to mention running out of time. That's an awful lot of publications to read.
It is, and the Dispatch, and as I read those, and the more I read them, one, you can tell which way each one of those publications leans.
You can.
Absolutely can. And the editorial board will let you know.
Yes.
Right? The Wall Street Journal editorial board will give their opinion.
Right.
As will the New York Times editorial board. But then also, you can read all the stories if there's something that's going on, whether it's tariffs or Trump or the Middle East, and you'll find where the facts all come together in a line. And if there are facts that are laid out in the Wall Street Journal, the National Review, and the New York Times, and the Washington Post, you're like, that's probably pretty darn true.
You would hope.
When they're all aligning. And then you can see, oh, this is interesting. This publication amplified or diminished this. There are some reporters that are worse than others. Maddie Friedman wrote for the Associated Press in the Gaza Bureau.
Okay.
And he said, it's really important to note, whenever you have reporters in a bureau located in an authoritarian regime, all of the information that comes out of that bureau has to be vetted by that very authoritarian regime.
Right.
He said he watched Hamas launch rockets from a hospital, from a daycare across the street. Hamas was in the building where he worked, and you were not allowed to document those things. And the Associated Press would put out the papers, right? Without all those facts that had been basically redacted. So he left the Associated Press, that I can't do it anymore. I can't work from this bureau and not tell the whole truth.
Right, because you're part of the problem at that point.
Yes. So then he became a contributing writer to the New York Times that let him report on all of this. He was no longer in the bureau in Gaza, but he reported his experiences in the New York Times. And I say all this because I am so grateful, and it's so necessary to have a free press. And it is okay to really appreciate the work that great reporters do and still use discernment and say, well, maybe this story or in this area, I'm not thrilled with how that publication covered it.
But wouldn't you agree to his earlier point of what people have said back to him? Trust in national media is probably at an all-time low. Mm-hmm. Because I think when you talked about the fact that, you know, if it's Fox or CNN or MSNBC, when you get to the evening, you get past 6 o'clock at night, those are all opinion people.
Yeah.
Those are not reporters, as you would normally refer to what we think of as a reporter, mm-hmm. right? So they're not Sean or Michael, who's out covering a story, or Megan, who's out covering a story, right?
Yeah.
I think all of them do a great job of not putting a bias into a story, but actually reporting facts. Then you have people like us who would get on, and we're here for opinion. We're not here to be reporters.
Yeah, I'm
right?
an opinion giver. Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Republican sitting on an elected body. I've got a
and
bias.
And I'm on an island, by the way. I am neither Republican nor Democrat anymore. I'm on an island dying by myself.
We will help you get back. It's okay. We're going to find a place. But I think that's one of the biggest things is because you have news networks that are called news networks, but they have as many opinion people as they have reporters, mm-hmm. if not more, then it really makes it hard for a viewer to really discern who's a reporter and who's an opinion person? Because I have so many opinion people who are with the reporters that I don't know who's who, because it's not like they get identified when they come on, right? So if you're watching Fox News at 8 a.m. and here comes Bill and Dana to do their stories, I would call Bill more of a reporter and Dana more of an opinion person. Well, you're doing a news show. So if you have that, that's very gray for me now as a viewer.
Do you know, when you're speaking of gray areas, another medium that has blurred the lines is social media.
Yes.
Because you'll have reporters who work for a legacy outlet like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal who will write a story that's vetted by their editors. There's the gatekeeping. But then they have a Twitter handle. And on Twitter, they can give opinions that might never make it into a news story.
Correct.
Because it wouldn't pass the gatekeeping, but it still, because it has that reporter's name, which is connected to the media outlet, it gives the appearance of gatekeeping.
Yes.
So I felt like that blurred the lines. Like if reporters gave opinions on social media, they may not be giving opinions in their printed articles, but now it's all blurred.
I really think if you're going to be a reporter, you really kind of need to take the line like you're a judge. Mm-hmm. You can't have an opinion on social media. You just can't.
Yeah.
If your integrity is important to you, you really can't give people that ammunition to use against you to say, did you see what he put on X? Did you see what she put on Instagram? Or something there to go, look at that bias opinion. Now I'm going to look at you through that filter mm-hmm. with everything that you put out, and I'm going to question anything that you say because now I know who you are as a person. I got to see how you truly feel and what you truly think. And because of that, now I'm going to view you as biased. Whether you are or you're not going forward, doesn't matter. Now perception is your biases is going to be written into every story that you do.
And I will say too, when it comes to reporters, because there are certain journalism schools, we know this, where you're advancing an agenda.
Yes.
Where it's like the activist reporter, which is kind of a newer phenomenon. It really
it is.
It's a newer phenomenon. It's not everybody, for sure, but it's a newer phenomenon. Matty Friedman talks about this, the guy who writes now for the New York Times or contributes to the New York Times. And they, you know, analogies can only go so far. I say like analogies are like toupees. They best serve their purpose from a distance, but don't hold up under close inspection. Jonah Goldberg said that, and I think it's great.
That.
Yes. And so you know how there are so many awesome police officers who do so much great critical work.
Yes.
But there are some bad apples, and bad apples make the news. And you know who gets most mad at bad apples? Bad police officers are good police officers, right? Because you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this
you
is...
You just spoiled it for all of us.
You spoiled it for all of us. And yes. I do think there's an element of that in media. There are some real bad apples when it comes to reporting. There was terrible reporting, I believe, or like I said, amplification or diminishing of certain facts when it came to everything that's happening in the Middle East, where I was angered. I mean, the BBC had to issue 221 retractions.
Wow.
Regarding the Middle East. It was really bad. I would say it's criminal what they did. But it's like, oh my gosh, that's ruining it for the good reporters.
It is.
Every biased reporter really does a lot of harm to the good journalist. Anyway.
It's going to be interesting to see how him asking for the public to hold him accountable. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And are they actually going to hold him accountable? And will he hold himself accountable?
That's Mike Elam. I'm Amy Markscores. We'd love for you to join us. 314-436-7900. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Couple of texts rolling on in before we chat with the executive director of the American Psychiatric Association. We have 636 says, I have a journalism degree from Mizzou. Reporters do not ask follow-up questions anymore or ask why. They ask softball questions and accept the answer. I will say, like, that's a pretty broad brushstroke. I don't think that's all reporters.
Well,
maybe there are some.
I understand what they're saying, though.
Another 636, when we were talking about news and if you sense a bias, right,
yes,
in one way or the other, a 636 says, even sequence of facts can make a huge difference. And that's absolutely true. I've taught, you know, writing courses, honors writing and AP literature, and you can read a news story. Some pretty important facts sometimes are 8 or 9 paragraphs deep.
Yes.
Right? That might be a mitigating factor. And you're like, oh, wow, that seems like a important fact to bury deep. Another person says, it's not just facts, but it is completely about facts. It's about what facts will be reported and which ones won't and which ones will be prioritized. And yes, that's what we were saying is a lot of times when you talk about media and maybe you're unhappy with certain elements of media, it is what facts are amplified and what facts are diminished.
Well, a lot of times it's a sin of omission, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave you. I'm going to write this story, but I'm going to leave certain facts out because that doesn't help my narrative. I'm going to conveniently forget those.
Yeah. But I guess that's, like I said, the best thing I can say is when you do have some bad apples, it's so frustrating because there are a lot of journalists doing really important work and putting their lives on the line. And think of all the information we wouldn't have because we don't have access, whether it's the front lines of a war zone,
right,
or a political office, or even this is why I think I was super frustrated with the Pentagon revoking the access of all these media outlets, because they wouldn't kiss the ring of Pete Hegseth or whatever it was. Because when you do have access, you make connections and then you have sources that trust you and you build those relationships. Whether we are talking about Cardinals baseball or foreign policy with our country, a lot of reporters have built rapport and trust and relationships with over the course of years with people in power who say, listen, I can't speak on the record, but here's what's going on.
And relationship building is everything.
It's everything.
It really is.
And so that's why, again, I don't like the broad brushstrokes. And I think it's fine to have valid criticisms that are specific to this and this and that. But yeah, the broad brushstrokes, I think are damaging.
I do appreciate those reporters that you can just tell these people work their butts off to get story and get it done. One of my favorite reporters is Trey Yingst from Fox News. And he's the guy who's always covering something in the Middle East or something on the other side of the world. And you see this guy in just really life-defying situations. And you're like, man, that guy could die at any time. And you see him with the helmet and the vest, and there's bombs going on around him. And I'm thinking, man, God love that camera guy who's shooting you right now, that no one knows who he is, but he's there putting you on. But I see that guy do those stories with Trey Yingst doing those type of things. And I'm like, I believe anything that guy tells me. Because he has the credibility to me that said he's done the stories and it doesn't seem to have a bias to it, because he's not doing political reports.
Right.
He's doing, here's what's going on in the Middle East. Here's what's happening in Gaza and that kind of stuff. So God love those folks.
Right. No, that's such a great point. I'll add Leland Vittert.
Yes.
For News Nation he was attacked during the Arab Spring. He was reporting from the Middle East. He does great work. Leland Vittert started here, interned here with Charlie Brennan. Clarissa Ward came from, I think, a rather affluent family, and then was, after 9/11, wanted to help and used her journalism degree to travel all over the world and go to some of the most dangerous places in the world because she wanted to make a difference after 9/11. So, yes, like you said, hats off and helmets on to those to those journalists. Hey, when we come back, Raul Andrews Jr. joins us. He is the executive director of the American Psychiatric Association New Year's Resolutions. For a lot of Americans, they're shifting towards mental health. That's next on The Chris and Amy Show. Keila, Mamie, Mark.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Mark Score is with you on this January 2nd. Maybe you're considering your New Year's resolution. Maybe you've made one. And if you have, there's a good chance that it has something to do with mental health, because Americans are concerned about their mental health. In fact, 53% of U.S. adults feel anxious about the uncertainty of 2026. And joining us now is Raul Andrews Jr., the executive director of the American Psychiatric Association. And Raul, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Just for your audience's benefit, I'm the executive director of the APA Foundation.
Gotcha.
We are the affiliated charity of the American Psychiatric Association.
Thank you so much. Well, I know a lot of people are interested in this conversation. A lot of anxiety in our country right now for various reasons. It could be political, could be economic, financial. It could be just the advent of social media and how the social media is breaking all of our brains. What are you seeing among American adults as we head into 2026?
So you're spot on, and this is a great question. We are encouraged at the APA Foundation because more than one in three Americans for 2026 say they plan to make a mental health-related New Year's resolution. And what that looks like is greater connectivity between the way we live our lives and an appreciation that there is no health without mental health. And the 1 in 3 this year is up 5% from last year's poll.
Wow, 5% already.
In just 1 year's time. Mm-hmm. And it's led by our youth, the 18 to 34 cohort. 58% of those Americans 18 to 34 are significantly reporting higher mental health resolutions than other adults in the poll.
You know, I was talking here with Mike earlier this morning about social media. It is so prominent. And he said he's going to be more intentional, or he has been more intentional,
yeah,
with not waking up in the morning and getting on social media right away. Is that the type of thing you're seeing, like intentionality with what we're consuming?
I believe that is exactly what the poll is telling us, and it's certainly what my doctors at the APA are sharing with me, that if we're more intentional about our do's and don'ts, that is going to have a positive benefit on our overall health, not just our mental health. And so, you know, one of the things I've done on the advice of our doctors at APA, I've turned off all my breaking news alerts. And so it doesn't force me to read something right before I go to bed. So it takes me to bed feeling off. But then when I get up first thing in the morning and I'm just trying to get my bearings straight to attack the day, and then I'm besieged with something that probably could have waited 5-10 minutes. So what we're encouraging people to do is try to give yourself a break in 2026. Start off maybe the first 5 minutes, first 10 minutes, just as close to silence as you can, and then turn on KMOK and let's get going.
You know, it's really interesting that you say that about the breaking news alerts. I have them on my phone, and obviously with my job, you know, I get those alerts. But I will say, the horrific tragedy that happened in Switzerland on New Year's Eve, where there was a fire in the bar in the ski town, and 40 people died, over 100 people injured. I woke up in the morning, and the first thing I saw was my phone had exploded with all of those news alerts about all of the death and tragedy. And it's not that I'm going to remain ignorant to it. I'm not. But it was almost like the first thing I saw getting out of bed, opening my eyes, I couldn't even, you know, get my bearings. And I was reading about one of the most horrific New Year's tragedies we've ever, you know, had. And that felt unhealthy because I'm not emotionally or, you know, or mentally ready to absorb that news.
But Amy, I think you're stressing the importance to your audience. We're human beings. We're not human doers. And so you wouldn't be a human being if you didn't feel some kind of way about a tragedy like that or any kind of tragedy. The question is, what do we do with that tragedy once we've gotten it locked into our mindset, right? Are we going to continue to just follow every possible story, particularly for the non-journalist among us? Or are we going to say, you know, maybe that is a sign that we need to go and check our fire alarms in the house or the apartment? You know, a lot of times those buzzers go off, and instead of replacing the battery, you know, we just want to take the thing down. So maybe that's another thing we could be doing for our health is, you know, let's pray for those who are suffering and who we lost. But then how do we course correct for our own households?
I'm just curious in thinking about, you know, we're getting into the new year here. And a lot of times we started off today talking about New Year's resolutions and trying to do something different for the new year. What are your doctors saying are best practices that we should be doing to really try to get our own mental health well-being in order?
So first of all, we want to notice what the signs and symptoms of our stress happen to be, our distress. We know that physical health and fitness in the poll is one of the things that our doctors saw. We know that financial health also was a challenge. And so, you know, the things that we're talking about are you getting enough sleep? You know, one of the things the devices do, Mike, is it keeps us from getting restful sleep so we can recharge and reflect. You know, the other thing that we do is that we're not outside of whatever our activity of choice, we're not moving enough. You know, so we're sitting in a sedentary place, just incoming, and there's no outflows. And then finally, you know, maybe it is time. if you've been carrying around a lot of weight, anxiety, or depression, to talk to somebody about it. You know, could be a faith leader, could be a trusted family member, could be a school official, you know, could even be a therapist or a doctor who could point us in a better direction, sometimes to just validate what we're doing or not doing, not necessarily to give us a script of we got to change everything overnight.
What role does self-talk, the conversations we have in our head with ourselves, the things we say about ourselves, play in mental health?
Well, according to our doctors, it's a significant driver because our beliefs and our self-talk can turn into our actions and it can increase the stressors in our lives. And so, you know, one of the things we encourage at the foundation is folks to be kinder to yourselves so you can be kinder to others. And, you know, one of the ways of mindfulness practices that we see that can help is maybe you journal. You know, you just jot down, whether that's on your device or with a pen or pencil, and you just write down, you know, what's worrying you. And then, you know, you cross the line in your chart and say, you know, what's one thing that I could do to try to ease some of that tension, try to ease some of that stress? But yes, Amy, you're exactly right. If people feel bad about themselves or they feel down about themselves, there is no question they'll be worried about yesterday that put me in the predicament today, and they'll be anxious about whatever I think is the outlook for tomorrow. What that turns into, Amy, is people disengaging from regular normal activity because we heal and thrive in community. And if we talk down about ourselves, we think other people see us the same way or worse. Now we don't want to go out the way we normally did. And so in isolation, it's that loneliness that is increasingly on the rise that's causing some of our stress and our mental health concerns.
We're talking with Raul Andrews Jr. about mental health. You know, Raul, one of the things that I had heard is young men in particular are starting to do these things where they're isolating themselves. They're getting into the video games and they're basically just becoming hermits in their own house. And I'm talking about teenage boys into young 20s. And we seem to be losing them because they're drifting into this isolationism that they've put themselves into and they don't really have a pathway to break out. If you have a young person, if either a friend of yours or one of your kids or a grandkid or a nephew or something, what's the best way that we could reach out to try to help them? If you see them going down a path and you go, man, I really want to help you get back, what can we do?
So the first thing we want to do is recognize that if we approach somebody in a defensive posture, they'll go further into whatever might be a concern to them. And so one of the things we employ, Mike, is what we call the notice, talk, act framework. We believe it is the stop, drop, and roll of mental health. And in our notice, talk framework, what we would say is, Mike, here's some things that I've noticed that are causing me concern about how I saw you the last couple weeks and so forth. And maybe there's nothing going on and it's just me, but you know, if you want to talk about anything, I want you to know that I'm here for you. The second thing is that we have gotten a federal grant, Mike. We're in year four now for our Notice Talk framework in schools, all K-12 schools in the United States, including the great state of Missouri. We can bring that training, Notice Talk Act at School, to any K-12 school, doesn't matter, public, private, charter, to Missouri, no charge to the school, no charge to the faculty and staff, no charge to the families. I don't know why anybody wouldn't take that benefit. And then finally, you know, the other thing you can do since people are online so much, as Amy mentioned, there's the 988 crisis helpline. And people can call, text, or chat 988. If they're in your listening audience right now and just want to talk to somebody or just want to chat with somebody, a real person, Mike, not a bot. So nice. Let's start with Notice Talk Act, and then let's look at 988 if we need it.
Raul, it's been so great talking to you, and I know we've got more questions and would love to speak with you again. But before we let you go, what resources, if someone's listening and feels like they just need maybe they need help or just some kind of guidance or know someone who needs some help or guidance, what resources does the American Psychiatric Association Foundation offer that maybe people can use?
So the first one, again, I want to reiterate that Notice Talk Act at School resource is free, and there's no catch. You can go to apaf.org to learn more, /schools, to learn more about that program. We also have a public service campaign. It is the only anti-stigma campaign, Amy, that doesn't use the word stigma. It's called mentalhealthcareworks.org, and it does a lot to help people understand conditions. Like, what is the difference between anxiety and depression, and how do I know one or the other? So that's mentalhealthcareworks.org. And then finally, please, if there's anybody in your circle of trust or in your network or your audience who really needs to reach out to somebody today, call or text 988.
Raul Andrews, Jr., Executive Director of the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, joining us today. We really appreciate it, Raul, and look forward to talking with you again.
Well, Happy New Year to you, and thank you once again for being a partner in this journey to make sure we all understand there's no health without mental health.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. That is Raul Andrews Jr. joining us today on The Chris and Amy Show. He's Mike Elam. I'm Amy Markscores. And joining us next is a columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Ben Hockman. We'll talk a little Cardinals offseason and also local newspapers. Why? Well, the beloved Atlanta Journal-Constitution is ending its print edition. That would have been unheard of 20 years ago, but alas, here we are. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Mike Elam, Amy Markscores with you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On a Friday, it feels like a Monday, joining us now is Ben Hockman, columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Ben, thanks for joining us on this, what is probably still a holiday for a lot of people.
Yeah, I know it's a day that ends in Y. I just don't know what day of the week it is.
Exactly. Well, I know I mentioned the Cardinals offseason, but I want to talk to you first just about newspapers, because the Atlanta Journal-Constitution announced on Thursday that it is planning, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution had announced earlier this summer that it was moving to digital only, and that are officially kicked in with the beginning of 2026. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution no longer has a print edition. It's fully digital. And I personally get a pain in my heart every time we lose a local newspaper.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's very sad to hear. I mean, the reality is there's still going to be news gatherers for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in Atlanta, but just online. And for me, it's like, we want to make sure we, at our newspaper, the Post-Dispatch, or any newspaper, want to make sure that every member of the community has access to the news that we are reporting. It's as simple as that. And so that's what's frustrating, is that some people would only read the Atlanta paper as a paper, and now they can't do that anymore.
Do you know, I remember, and Mike, I don't know if you remember this too, my grandpa read the newspaper. You know, he was a news guy. And on, I think it was like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, maybe. I think it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. He would go to the library, and there was the section where all the newspapers were hanging up on the rack.
Yeah.
Because he didn't subscribe. He was, you know, very frugal. I guess he didn't subscribe to all the daily newsletters,
but
he wanted to read them.
The library was doing it for him.
That's right. And I remember going with Papa. We'd go to the library while he would read his newspapers. And I think in this, you know, political environment that's so charged, we talk about echo chambers and so forth and so forth, I do think taking out the razzle dazzle of television and like laying the facts out on a newspaper and people reading, I think even consuming it differently matters in how you process all of the news. Maybe I'm romanticizing it, but I think that it's important for conversation in our society. I don't know. What did you think, Ben, when it just comes to newspapers and how people digest news?
Yeah, I mean, it's so important that people get the truth, that people get the facts, and people can depend on daily news. And, you know, I'm not trying to be an advertisement for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, but we're very proud in how we work as journalists to find the news, report the news, and then for people like me who are columnists, analyze the news or provide commentary about it. And yeah, I mean, the reality is that people are reading news different ways, whether it's in your pocket or in your hands with the newspaper, but we want to provide a flood of journalism, you know, at your fingertips. And what's sad in Atlanta and some other American cities is that because of the business behind it, the actual newsprint is unable to happen in Atlanta.
I miss the inky fingers.
Sure.
I mean, my fingers would be gray. I, for years, had the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times delivered daily.
Oh, wow.
Which is a lot to read. And I will say, sometimes I'd fall behind and then you just feel, and I would feel guilty. But I love the sound of the newspaper. The first true fangirl moment I had, Ben, and I know you've been in here on a Sunday. The first time I went to KMOX and I was a guest, and it was Sunday morning, and Tom Ackerman was sitting in Studio B, and he had his cup of coffee and his newspaper, and he was doing the sports from the newspaper, you know, and speaking in Studio B and drinking his coffee. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is what radio is supposed to be, baby. A newspaper and an AM channel.
Totally. And it still can be, and it still is. There's just other, I guess if it's an octopus, if journalism's an octopus, there's different tentacles now.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
Hey, Ben, I know one thing that Amy had led off with, talking Cardinals offseason. I want to kind of get back to that real quick.
Sure.
What do you think the expectation should be for a Cardinal fan going into the next year? Do you think we should be optimistic, or should we just come to terms with, you know, this is going to be a rebuilding year. Understand it is what it is. Chaim Bloom has got a plan, but it's not going to be an overnight thing. What would you say to that?
Yeah, along those lines, I think we can go into it, we being St. Louis, as I don't think the Cardinals are going to be a World Series champion 2026, and they may lose more games than they win, and that stinks, and that's frustrating. But we can also go into it and say, look, they finally made the change. And I had written in the newspaper, in the Post-Dispatch, that they should have gotten rid of Mozeliak a year prior and let Bloom cook. You know, he'd have been working for a year at this point. But that didn't happen, and the Cardinals lost last year, if you will, and now Chaim Bloom's taken over. But the reality is, and the optimistic part of it is, okay, a plan is in place now. And yes, they're trading players you've heard of for players you've not heard of, but the goal is that the players you've not heard of are so talented and so young that by 27, 28, they'll be good. And then moreover, and I wrote this in the paper, if you can be a baseball romantic, kind of like Amy's a newspaper romantic, which is awesome to hear, you can fall for a Mason Wynn who plays shortstop with the same dazzle that Ozzie Smith does. Or you could fall for a Victor Scott who loves putting on the birds on the bat in his uniform and playing center field like a Kurt Flood, like a Willie McGee, like a Harrison Bader, like a Jim Edmonds. I mean, there's people you can get behind and you can root for and follow and get on board with, even if the final outcome of the game might not go your way.
Ben Hockman, columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We appreciate your time and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Take care.
Thanks, Ben. Hey, when we come back, Danan Hughes, Kansas City Chiefs radio analyst and former wide receiver, joins us, as he always does on a Friday. We'll talk a little Chiefs football, and I think Mike's got some college football questions for Danan. Just a couple minutes on the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.